financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rahm. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I'm doing good. What are we talking about this week?
All right. So this is not usually a show about math because that's hard to do on the radio, but sometimes it just comes down to crunching the numbers. Mm-hmm. And we get asked this so often, and it seems to be such a vast problem for people, stresses them out. They don't have a solution. Many people will tell me that they've called many places and they've just been told to spend less money, or they've been told to, you know, sell their car and buy a different car, or some sort of simple solution, which mm-hmm. sounds great when you're giving that advice, but not so great when you're getting it. Because clearly, if you were able to just fix it that way by spending less money or changing your car, you would have done it by now.
Right.
So the real problem that I see average households struggling with is, how come we keep making more money, but we mm-hmm. never have enough? Why is it that even with the prices of inflation, you know, my husband or wife or partner just got a raise, and still we're looking at overdraft fees? It looks like we make enough money. When mm-hmm. we sit down at the table and we look at our income, it looks like we should make enough money. It can't just be that one little emergency cropped up. There must be some sort of problem here. There's some symptom that we're not diagnosing. And so that's what I want to talk about today. And I literally want to tell people how they can figure this out once and for all for themselves. They can obviously ask us for help, but we're really going to go through this. It's not as difficult as it sounds, but you have to have a logical approach, and you must remove yourself a little bit from this emotionally and just try and take the steps I'm going to tell you. I promise you, it isn't about you can't have a cup of coffee. We're not talking, you know, detailed budget here at this stage. We're talking macro picture, zooming mm-hmm. out to figure out what is the real problem.
You know, I mean, automatically, the first thing that comes to my mind is, and I think everybody's going to say this, is that when our parents were going to buy houses, the cost of the house wasn't that much more compared to their salary than it is now. Like, the difference between our salary now and what the cost of a house is so much greater that it seems unattainable.
Well, that's all true, right? That our dollar doesn't go as far as mm-hmm. it used to. I think that's a fair statement to make. But those are the kinds of things. And believe me, I'm not picking on you. I love that you say these things, because this is just what people say to me. Mm-hmm. The reason I don't have enough money is because things are too expensive.
Right.
But that's not helpful to you if you're mm-hmm. the one struggling with not having enough money and you're trying to figure out, okay, so I get that my house is more expensive. I understand that my kids are more expensive. I understand that I don't get raises that are commensurate with my increase in expenses, or perhaps I'm living on a fixed income. But how do I fix that? You know, that's just a fact of life. This stuff is more expensive. And the first thing people do is they point a finger at something and they say, don't buy so much house. Don't drive such mm-hmm. a nice car. Don't go out to eat. Well,
right.
That's great, but it isn't working, right? So here's what you have to do. You absolutely must figure out whether or not you actually have a deficit, not enough money, or you have an organizational problem, which is usually in the form of some months we're okay, some months we're not.
So what is the saying? It's too much month at the end of the money?
Too much month at the end of the money. Exactly. So I'll give you some examples. Here's an example that works for most people, how most people work their household budgets. They certainly pay all their bills, you know, the best that they can, but they're mm-hmm. also trying to save, because they know, if you listen to us, you know, hey, you've got to have emergency cash reserves,
right.
or they want to take a vacation and they don't necessarily want to keep putting it on a credit card. Mm-hmm. So they peel some money off the top. Retirement fund, whatever. So they say, out of every paycheck, we're going to put $50 a month into our emergency reserves account, $50 mm-hmm. a month or $100 a month, let's use different figures, $100 a month into our vacation fund. And by the way, we're going to max out our 401k and we're going to peel that money off the top before we ever get our net pay. And that should help us to save for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Seems logical, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many years have we been hearing, pay yourself first, save off the top?
Right.
I hate to fly in the face of these lovely little quips, like pay yourself first and save off the top. But I'm just going to say, colloquially, how's that working for you? Okay.
Yeah.
So we've talked about this before. If you save too much money, if there is such a thing, right? If you save too much money off the top, you end up with less money in your pocket to pay your bills.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay if you have enough money to do that. But once again, we are back to the root cause, which is how do you identify this? Okay, let's zoom out for a minute. Macroeconomics at a household level, okay?
Okay.
I love that. Macroeconomics at a household level. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's the thing. And this is not uncommon, by the way. People okay. come to me and they say exactly what we're talking about. I don't get it. We make more money this year, made more money this year than we made last year. Some months it looks okay, but we're always living in terror of when the mortgage payment comes out on the first of the month.
Right.
Now, there is a way to change the date of your payments to maybe organize a little bit, but that's probably not your only solution and certainly not the best solution. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But here we go. If you can tolerate me going through the math for just a little bit, I'll try and use simple numbers. Just catch the concept. I want
you to
go
to your bank account.
Yes. Okay. Go to your bank account. Okay. However many bank accounts you have. Now it gets more complicated and the problem is more prevalent among people who have several bank accounts. So they have a checking account for bills. They have a checking account for debt. They have a vacation fund. They have an emergency fund. They have a Christmas club, whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you start to separate your money into different accounts, although it may be good for you to organize it that way, I call this lost socks in the dryer. Okay. Where okay. do those socks go anyway?
Okay.
Okay. So the same thing happens when you have many accounts. If you round things up, for instance, you just pluck out of thin air. Let's see. Last year we spent, pick a number, $1,000, $600, whatever, on the holidays. So mm-hmm. we need to put away $50 a month for the holiday. Okay.
Right.
You start putting away $50 a month. Well, maybe you end up, that's usually just a start for people, right? So at the end of the year, you've saved your $50 a month. You have $600 in your account, but lo and behold, you spend $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's a $400 deficit just in that one account. Now, if you're only looking at that one account, that's easy to see. But where did that $400 come from? It either came from one of your other accounts,
mm-hmm.
depleting the money in those accounts that was there to pay your bills, et cetera.
Or a credit card.
Exactly. Or it got put on a credit card. So the very first step, we're not going to forget about credit cards, I promise. But the very first step is I want you to open up your bank account statements in your bank. I want you to take 12 months, okay? So we're in October right now. I want you to go back to September of last year.
Okay.
And for every month, this is very easy to do. It's not going to be as complicated as it sounds. For every month, I'd like you to open up your bank statement, and I want you to get the beginning balance. Well, let's mm-hmm. first just do the simplest of things, really macro. Open up September of last year and take the beginning account balance out. And okay. log it. We have a little bank account log that helps you do this, but you could build your own if you're so inclined, okay? So you just pop the number in there. There's where I started. Let's say you started at $2,000,
mm-hmm.
okay? Now, just for a moment, just to make this very simple and really zoom out, let's ignore what happens within the next 12 months. Let's go to your August statement when the month ends, open it up, and see what your ending balance was.
Okay, so you're starting with the beginning balance and ending with the ending balance.
That's okay. right. Because what I'm trying to do is get a really wide shot. Forget where the money got spent,
mm-hmm.
but a really wide shot of I started in September a year ago with $2,000.
Right.
And I ended a year later with $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
You have a $1,000 deficit. Okay.
Okay.
Let's make the numbers a little simpler. You started with $2,500. You ended with $1,000. You lost $1,500 somewhere. Okay.
Because is what you're saying, you should have the same balance at the beginning of every month? If it's...
No. I'm taking a whole year's time and I'm saying, where is this little hole in your pocket? Okay.
Okay.
And I'm doing it right now. I'm doing it one account at a time. So if you only had one account in theory and you started out with $2,500 in September of last year and you ended up with $1,000, right? You have a $1,500 difference. If you started with this much money and you ended up with this much money, I don't care where it got spent, somewhere over that 12-month period, you ended up with less money. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com. I'm just trying to take a 12-month period. So just one account at a time. So if you start at the beginning of September, if you want to start at the beginning of October, that's fine. But I want you to look at that whole period of time, right? See what you have for a deficit in just one account. Now, maybe you have a deficit. Maybe you don't. Maybe you had enough money in that account and you ended up with a $3,000 surplus. You think you're okay. What about your other accounts? Now, this is where it gets complicated for people, which is why we have this log that you can just plug every account in, do it month by month, and bam, the number's right in front of you, right?
Yeah.
So you do this for every account. And at the bottom, you're going to see whether this is a deficit or a surplus across the board, right? For that 12-month period, whether you do it beginning to beginning or beginning to end, it's going to be close enough at a macro point for you to see what happened over a 12-month period. Now, the reason that you might have been questioning that is because I haven't gotten into the nitty-gritty yet, which is to look at every single month and see what's happening. But just to begin with, do you have enough money or not? Is that really the problem? This will tell you, look, we spent more across all our accounts totaled up. We spent more than we had coming in or than we made for deposits. Okay. Then you can start to say, okay, we have a deficit. Let's figure out where that is. Now, it might be that that money was going into the 401k and that's still your money, but you didn't get to spend it. It didn't go into your checking accounts, right?
Right.
Or it might be something like we take money out of this account and put it in that account. And we don't notice that until we look at all the accounts together. So the idea is that you have to look, first of all, at the big picture. Do you have enough money? Do you not have enough money? Then we can start to look at this, and we'll talk about this in the second half, but we can start to look at this a month at a time and include credit cards. And I promise you, by the time we're done with this, you're going to be able to identify how much money you're short, if at all, or where the problems exist. Does it just happen in February, but then it's okay in April when you get a tax refund? Right. So we'll look at those things together in the second half. If you hang in there with me.
All right. Let's get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can also visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, coming up on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi, thank you for sticking around.
Yeah, sure. You know, this is not an easy thing we're doing to do it on radio. When we do the podcast on video, maybe I'll put some slides in there to explain to people what we're talking about. But I'm hoping that it might help some people to recognize at least a starting point of what is causing these overdraft fees, what is causing them to be in the negative some months and not others, and why they can't seem to fix it.
Are there any laws regarding overdraft fees? Because they drive me nuts. Like, my thought is, like, if a bank gets a check and then you don't have enough to cover it, then don't cash it. Don't cash it for me and then charge me $36 or whatever the exorbitant amount is. And it's not just like, if you want to get like a little tap on the hand, like, and I know you can have overdraft protection, but still a lot of banks charge this money and then it gets people further in the hole. Like, if anything, couldn't there be some law that maxes it out at like $5 or something? I don't know. I just feel like if you don't have the money in the account, don't cash the check.
Well, I like that too. The banks would probably say, yeah, but that means we have to pay somebody to check your account and, you know, send you a letter and do all this stuff. And so there's a fee. And so we're going to charge you because we're trying to deter that.
I don't think the fee should be $36, but yeah.
Let me tell you, it's astronomical. This is a little side story, but I had a woman come in to see me one day, urged by her parents, you know. She was in her 30s and she just had real anxiety about money and she just didn't want to look at money. And so she would go to the mailbox, get her mail, take her bank statement and just chuck it inside. She never opened them.
Right.
She came into my office with a shoebox of statements.
Unopened. Yeah.
We opened them together. And do you know that in a year's time, she had paid more than $3,000 in overdraft fees?
That angers me so much. Like it's hurting people that don't need to be hurt more. And then you get in a hole and you can't get out of it.
Well, to some extent, you're right, but she could have opened her bank statements and done something about it, and she didn't. So, you know, the blame is on both places. But I agree with you.
What could she have done about it? She'd still have to pay it.
Not $3,000 worth. The first time she opened her bank statement and saw that she was overdrawn, she could have talked to the bank or to a financial advisor about it and said, how do I fix this? Which is what we're about to tell you, okay? So how do you fix it? All right. Let's suppose you really don't have enough money at the end of the year. Okay, now how are you going to figure out where that's gone? You've done my little test of macro, right? And now I want you to start zooming in slowly. So the first thing you're going to do is take that bank account log, whether it's ours or something that you've built. Make sure every account, don't tell me, hey, we put $50 a month in our vacation fund and we take $600 out, so that's a wash. If it comes in or out of an account, I want it in that log.
Okay.
Right. Because now you're going to get to look at it a month at a time. So for instance, in the idea of a holiday account, every month you might see that $50 deposit and you might say, hey, from January to whatever, October, we're okay. But then in October, in November, it looks like we have a deficit. Yeah, because that money came out of that account. So you can't just ignore it. You can't just count those deposits like they were real deposits. You have to balance this all across the board. So when you do this, what I want you to do is open those bank statements again. And you're going to like this part because it's exactly what you're talking about. I want you to take the deposits and the withdrawals, just those two numbers. So you want to take the withdrawals and the deposits, plug them into each month of the list and see what the difference is. If you deposited $13,000 and you withdrew $10,000, you still had $3,000 in that account at the end of the month.
Right.
If you add the other accounts at the bottom, you should see the net result. And I want you to do this for every month. Now, some months you're going to see that you deposited $10,000 and you withdrew $13,000. Now, you might say, how is that possible? It's possible because we aren't looking at this one month at a time any longer. Now we're looking at it over the course of a whole year. Now, if you wanted to go back 2 years, 3 years, you could do it. But I like to get 12 months because it's a pretty good idea.
It's not overwhelming. If you said to me, go back 5 years, I'd be like, yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. I mean, there will be some people that once they get this, once they say, wow, I finally figured it out, let me go back and do it. It becomes
fun.
But for the most part, just 12 months is enough to do this. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you're going to get your bottom line, whether you had a deficit or a surplus each month at the bottom of this list, when you total up all those accounts, right? Did you have enough money that month or did you not? Again, we don't know where it went. We don't care where it went for this exercise. We just care that you had enough. Okay. Or you didn't. When you look at that across the board, you're going to see that number I was talking about, whether it's a deficit or a surplus. Now, let's suppose it's a $1,500 deficit.
Okay.
So that tells you, that gives you a number. Forget where you spent the money. Don't argue about it. Just identify it. All we're looking for in this exercise is a target. Honey, look at this. After we did everything all year, the difference between where we started and where we ended up was $1,500. Yeah, I know I spent money on my nails and you spent money on your, it doesn't matter, right? Somehow we need $1,500 more to fix this problem. Then you might start identifying things like overdraft charges, expenses that are too high, whatever. You have to remember that's $1,500 net. Right? Take home pay that you have to fix that problem. And your next year would have to be pretty identical to this year. But try and save yourself from comments like, yeah, but this year we had a graduation party, Or, yeah, this year we had a vacation. We don't do that every year. We had this emergency expense. We don't do that every year. Yeah. Yes, you do. You just call them different things. All right. The graduation right. party turns out to be an anniversary party, and the vacation turns out to be somebody's braces. I mean, it's just going to be different stuff.
Yeah.
But one thing is really true. We tend to spend what we earn. And for people who have no idea, and that's most, dare I say, most of Americans have no idea how much they really have at the end of a block of time like that, when you put those end goals on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you can identify this and how what you can do to attack it. Now, people will say, well, I ended up okay in the end because I get a bonus, or because I get a tax refund, or I have a problem, but only in the summer months because I'm a teacher and they don't pay me over 12 months.
Right.
You know, people have a gut instinct as to what their problem is, and they can point a finger, or what their solution is. They can point a finger to it, like, I'll be okay when I get my bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't you rather be okay every month and not pay these $36 overdraft charges, or have to
Right.
rob Peter to pay Paul, or borrow from a parent, or pay your bills late because there wasn't enough money at the end of that month to get to those places, and so now you're paying late charges? So what I'm trying to give you here in a very abstract way is a way to identify whether you have this deficit or surplus. But we aren't quite done yet.
Okay.
Let's suppose you go through all of this and you look at these monthly things and you say, oh, well, the checking account looks okay. I think we had enough money. Go back and look at your credit card. Do the same thing with your credit cards.
Okay.
Where was the balance when you started that 12-month period, and has it climbed? If you started with a balance on your total credit cards of $2,000 and you ended up with a balance of $5,000, you built up $3,000 worth of debt.
So it wasn't as okay as you thought.
Right. Now, you made the minimum payments out of your checking accounts, savings accounts, all of that, right? So that's accounted for. But that means your deficit isn't $1,500. It's $4,500.
Yeah.
And you need to fix that, or you're going to be paying a lot of credit card interest and fees, right? If you're paying late fees or anything like that. So, you know, that's a little point I would like to make. It's an aside, but sometimes people will say to me, I don't want to pay my credit card late because I'm going to get a fee and it's going to harm my credit. Yes, you're going to get a fee if it's late. If it's past the due date, they're going to charge you that lovely fee, right? It's not going to show up on your credit until it's 30 days late. Just a thing to log in your memory banks, folks. It doesn't show up on your credit reports until it's 30 days late, but that doesn't mean you don't have to pay that fee. And that is all, in my mind, and to your point, wasted money. Overdraft charges and late fees are completely wasted money. You're just throwing it out the window. Wouldn't you rather go to dinner? You know, do a little work like this, or ask someone for help, and you'll be able to identify this. Now, there's some places where there are leaks that people don't necessarily, or I don't know if they can't, but they don't factor them in. Things like, I do all the money in the household and I see that, but my husband has an account. He gets $50 a week to spend however he wants.
Yeah.
And they don't factor it in. Well, where did that $50 come from? You know, that you might be balancing everything you've got and it might look kind of okay, but that $50 a week ends up to be, you know, more than $200 a month, 4.3 weeks in a month, right? And that might be putting you in the red and you're not even noticing it. Or the allowance you give to your children or something like that. Once you're done with this macro thing, that's when I want you to get micro. That's when, now, okay, we got this deficit. Where the heck is this money going? Now it's time for the budget that I'm always talking about, right? Where we identify every penny that goes anywhere from any of those accounts. And that's where the work can be done. Now you can say, okay, we're not crazy. It isn't that he spends too much on this or I spend too much on that. It just isn't. The fact is staring me right in the face. We have a deficit. Now we have to figure out how to solve it. And you can either earn more money or cut your expenses. Those are your two choices. There's no magic wand. But there are lots and lots and lots of things that can be done. And some of them are very easy. And the biggest progress that we see is once people do the budget part, right, where they just, again, they're not even building the budget. They're just tracking their expenses. Once they've tracked all those expenses and they start to see, we spent how much in entertainment average over this course of time, we spent how much in clothing. There are, you know, it's harder to cut back on things like your electric bill, right? Things that aren't necessarily largely within your control. I mean, if you want lights and, you know, you got kids or whatever, they're taking showers, all this sort of stuff is happening that's causing your hot water bills and your electric bills to rise. It's really hard to lock down on that stuff. But other things like how much you eat out, or whether you go to get a designer coffee every day, or how much you spend on groceries or subscriptions to things, those things can be pretty easily trimmed back. And when you're feeling good about it because you're solving a problem, it doesn't feel like punishment anymore. It feels like you're getting somewhere, you know, on the same page with your partner or by yourself. You're making some real progress finally, and you have a sense of control over your spending and over whether or not you're spending too much or you have money you could save. Because after all, the goal of all of this, Jess, is to be able to free up dollars so people are not held hostage to their bills every month.
Right.
I want people to be cash positive. I want them to have cash accounts. I want them to take vacations in cash, buy cars in cash, you know, pay off their mortgage in short record time, right? That's what I'm really hoping for people. So I know this is difficult to do on the air, but, you know, I've been asked it so many times and recently back to back three times. And I finally said, I've got to try to get the word out at least.
Yeah. I will say, when you put stuff into the program or you write stuff down, it's surprising, because when you're just going by memory, you tend to forget a lot of things, or at least I do.
There's no doubt. I mean, our tools are designed to be memory jogger tools, and there's a connect between your mind and writing something that isn't there with, okay, here you go. Yeah, $30. Okay. Yeah, it's gone. I mean, lots of times people just sign their name, don't even look at the balance.
You know, I would also say, going back to your client that came in that hadn't opened up the statements in like a year, they were just all unopened. You got to check those, because I can't tell you how many times I found that it either got like double billed for a car payment, or like an Amazon charge came out that I had no idea what it was from. There's always mistakes on there. So if you're short in your account, it might not just be you. It might be some weird thing like that.
It's a fabulous point, Jess, that you need to check your statements, your credit card statements, whether they're e-statements or paper statements, and your bank account statements, because you want to catch fraud as early as possible.
You know, and sometimes it's just a mistake like that. Like the car payment was a mistake, but it caused me to have problems with other things that I had coming out.
That's right. Yeah. And you might notice that, you know, on a checking account or something, you'll see a $1 charge and you don't know what that's for. That's either something you approved for the moment, so they test it for a dollar and then they charge your subscription fee and you know about it, or it's somebody trying to test your account. So you want to watch out for those. When you see that dollar charge or 99 cent charge or something, you want to make sure that you know where that came from.
Oh, that's a good tip. Yeah, I wouldn't think of that.
Yeah. And again, people can do this on their own if they feel like they have the skill set to do it. I'm happy to just support the idea that people are working on this on their own. If they want help, obviously we're here for that. But this show is really about just getting the word out about some tools and techniques that you can use to make your financial life more fit, financial fitness.
There you go. All right. Well, if you need a little bit of help, what is your phone number?
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can always go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jess.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com. Would you like to see your business on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor? We offer a 15-year proven track record. We have limited openings, but are currently seeking sponsors and guests. Is your business a good fit? We'd like to start a conversation. Contact us today at 413-773-3333 or info at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
Hey, Jess, how are you?
I am doing good. What are we talking about this week?
My favorite subject, free. I love to talk about things that are free, right?
Yeah.
But what we're really talking about is value. So as you know, we talk about a broad area of categories on the show because money infiltrates our lives in all different kinds of ways. One of the really popular things for people to be doing these days is called cutting the cord, right? They're going to figure out some way to cut the cord. They're going to get a streaming service or whatever. Now, there is some argument to be made about that. And there's actually some legislature pending that says that cutting the cord isn't really cutting the cord at all. If you're streaming things through, say, a Roku or an Apple podcast or something of that nature, it's still using the same internet provider that you're paying for that your regular cable comes through.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some people who say that's not cutting the cord at all, and we want legislation to help fix this. Now, on the other side of the coin, there is also a movement to pay less money into local television and local radio kinds of things, especially local TV, public access TV, or community television, as it's known. So just as a little history background right now, community television or public access is funded in part by, and largely in part by, cable TV through the Act of 1984 for the cable. They don't love that. Now, what that means is they have to give time on the air to the local public access station.
Mm-hmm.
So they do. They don't advertise it. They put you in the guide and it says, you know, there's a little picture of a remote. No idea what the channel is. We've tried many times at GCTV, our local public access TV, to get that corrected, and we don't. Now, that means that it's harder for people. Now, this is going to sound familiar. It's more difficult for you to get the free stuff, right? Why is that?
Mm-hmm. We know because you don't know where it is. Yeah.
You don't know where it is. And because it's in competition at some level with the money-making stuff. Now,
right.
Let's talk about what happens on local radio and public access, because what I am promoting here, if you will use that, allow me to use that word, is the idea that what I'm about to tell you will give you not only free access to television and radio that you might not be paying attention to, but also an expanded range of content, more podcasts, more interesting information, more local information, because if you haven't noticed yet, Netflix isn't showing you your local programming, okay?
Right, yeah.
Nor are the satellite stations, right? They're showing you cable and satellite TV. It's places like your station, WHMP, and public access stations like Northampton Community Television in your area, Greenfield Community Television in my area, all across the country where our show gets picked up and is watched by people, because now we videotape the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell I was a fan of Fraser Crane's years ago? Yeah. So now that content goes across the nation.
Mm-hmm.
That means that not only do other places get, you know, people out in Wisconsin, for instance, there's 49 stations that download from a server in Wisconsin, and they can get the Money Doctor show, right? They can get Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor in Wisconsin.
That's incredible.
Yeah, for free. So they're getting any financial coaching that we're doing on the air, any advice that we're giving on the air, they're getting it for free, downloading it from their local stations. Whereas if we were on a broadcast, a network station, they would have to pay for a package to get our show, et cetera, right? Okay.
Right.
So the statistics show that as we're having more layoffs and more closing of newspapers, we're getting less news. We are approaching an election right now. And whenever this show airs, we are always going to be approaching an election, maybe not a presidential election, but what about your local people? And the statistics show that less than half of the people now know who their local mayor or politicians are.
Oh,
they aren't getting access to it because they're watching reruns. So Something like 88% of the people watch reruns and 48% of the people have any idea who their local politicians are. We're talking about reruns like Grey's Anatomy or whatever, right? That's what's getting the time, the watching. That's why they're on over and over again. Those are getting the big numbers. So enter to the picture people at a local level who feel like it's important to give out some kind of information that might help the local public. That means we're turning to stations like yours to get local news on the radio, which, by the way, folks, is free. You're not a satellite radio station. You're a public radio station, right? So I want to talk to you about how that works for you, because I know you've done this at all different stations across the country, and to public access, what we call PEG access stations, for content you won't get anywhere else. It used to be sort of a misnomer that if you're watching local TV, you were getting, I don't know, somebody who, you know, really couldn't tap dancing because they had access to their public access TV. Yes, you will get some of that. Sometimes it's very entertaining, but you will also get really good content because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to survive and thrive by putting on really good local content that you can't get anywhere else. So we have, for instance, the show Baselines on there, which is an arts and entertainment show. We also have Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, which is about financial fitness, financial wellness, right? Mm-hmm. If we to that same station, we'll get live local broadcasting of the town meeting or of whatever other meetings might be there. We might get replays, if they had permission to do it, and most do, of sports events that have happened in the area. So do you mind talking to me a little bit about your experience with radio and news and how you think things are different for you at this station than they are at, say, a satellite station?
I mean, I've worked at different radio stations all across the country, from Kentucky to Detroit, Michigan to Providence, New Hampshire. I mean, I do think that radio is always going to be important. And the thing that's happening right now that just, you know, hammers at home is Asheville, North Carolina. They had the hurricane and they couldn't get anything. TV, power, all of that was gone. They've been relying on radio to be able to get any kind of information, to be able to do anything. And that's where local really comes in. Because yes, you can get a million different news stations on TV and radio that are all national, but local people, you know, they were getting information to each other, writing signs, like a handwritten sign saying this road is closed, and really just tuning into the radio to figure out where to get water, where to get supplies, because they had nothing. So it's when people talk about how radio is going away, it's a crisis like that that hits, that reminds you that it's more important than ever. That's really what so many people relied on. So many people who were missing family members or friends or people that they knew that lived there relied on the radio to get that information out, to be able to find people and help in recovery.
Yeah, we really can't replace that. You know, the local stations, both radio and TV, when we're talking about PEG access stations, and I'll define that in a second, they are their job is to nail down that local stuff that isn't getting played somewhere else. It doesn't mean that you will only catch local content. I remember there was a show called Homegrown 10 years ago when we were doing the Money Doctor show on GCTV in the studio. And Homegrown was on. Homegrown was the most popular show downloaded in the country on public access stations. It was across the nation. And we started getting picked up right behind Homegrown. And we rode on their coattails because they had so much traffic. And we were on either right before or right after them on many stations. And so people discovered the show and it became, I wouldn't use the word viral like we use now, which really is huge, right?
Yeah.
But it became very popular. And the same thing is happening now with financial fitness, and we're seeing it. You know, it's a sort of an organic thing. And it means that your sponsors get picked up and they go with you. So if we have, for instance, we're about to gain a new sponsor. I won't say who it is quite yet, but it's a local education facility. And they are expecting to be played locally, which they will get. They will also, because they have an adult education arm and they're a sponsor of our show, they will get picked up across the country. And so people in Las Vegas will see them. People in Santa Cruz will see them. People in, you know, Wyoming will see them. Any place across the country that's downloading the show, they'll get that exposure at the same time. So that means if you're, we talk about so many money-saving things here, not just cutting the cord for individuals, but how you can capitalize on something like this if you're a business. These stations require, in your case, in radio, they require advertising. And in the case of public TV, they require sponsorship. Think Sesame Street, right? Sesame Street doesn't have an ad on it. It has Sesame Street has been brought to you by or underwritten by or sponsored by.
Right.
Those kinds of things are allowed with certain parameters. So that's a very inexpensive way for you, relatively speaking, to sponsor a local show, to feel good about it, and get picked up either very much locally through many of these stations who all cover towns around, or across the country, if the show is getting picked up that way, for, you know, ridiculously low money compared to just going on to a national TV campaign. So for small business people, this might be a way to improve your bottom line or actually compete, even for large businesses. If you can really afford to sponsor some shows or take spots, you know, on a local radio station and get those multiplied, like your radio station, WHMP, is a Saga station. Saga owns, you know, however many stations. And they just, I don't know, last count, I thought it was 26, but there's probably a lot more.
I should know the answer to this, but I don't know.
Anyway, that's what happened with us too, is we went on one Saga station, we get picked up on other Saga stations. So it's a way for you, if you're a content creator, to create a lot of interest. And once it gets picked up in these places, search engines find you. The other day, somebody told me that all of our podcasts were available on Amazon.
Oh. Well,
every audio podcast we've done is available on Amazon. And I thought,
that's
great. Yeah. Look, and sure enough, there's all our podcasts. And as soon as I went to look, I said to the person, oh, I bet that's because of my connection with BBS Radio.
Right.
And it got picked up. Satellite kind of radio that got picked up there, and they feed it out to everything else. And so it's on Roku and it's on Amazon. And so this is what people, I think, are underestimating when they're thinking about putting something on a local, like a PEG access station. I promised I would define that. PEG is for public educational government.
Okay.
So most of these stations, we throw this lingo around like everybody knows what PEG access is. Public educational government. So most of these stations have two channels at least, sometimes more, and a radio station, a low frequency usually radio station, right? That happens right in their local area, like the Asheville stuff you were talking about. So that means that there's a public access channel for people who have something like we have, which isn't government related, but is useful to the public. Then there's the educational level, which has to do with high schools, colleges, cable access stations that have educational content. So it might be, you know, what's happening on the campus, what's happening around the campus. Maybe there's a band playing locally that the students are in. And these can be student-led productions as well. So that's the educational arm of it. And then the government arm usually is on another channel completely. And that really is government-related stuff. It's your local meetings. It's what's going on in town. Who's got something to tell you that is government-related, related to the office or whatever. So those are the three arms that a PEG access station is made up of. And PEG access is another name for community TV, public access. It's all the same thing. It's all
And it's all TV you can get for free.
Yeah, and it's free, and you're going to get it from your local station. You got to dig a little to find it. But guess what? Almost all of these stations are also streaming. So if you turn on your public, your guide to your cable TV, and you find, I'll just pick one out of the hat, a channel 15, a channel 17, whatever it is, you find that channel, and all it has is a picture of a remote, and it says guide, and you go there, and there's nothing, just go to the internet and look for that TV station, because they're probably streaming their content. That's how they're competing, and it's how somebody like us gets picked up and goes, you know, sort of semi-viral at the moment, right? So, but it's free, and you're going to get more content, different content than you get somewhere else. And you're going to find Jess and I on all those places, even though we're doing this local radio show, which we videotape and turn into a TV show.
And free is good because all the streamers have gone up in price and they continue to go up. But we're going to talk more about this coming up in the second half. I do want to get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, next on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hey, Jess. Thanks for hanging in there with me. People listening might be saying, why is the Money Doctor talking about this? And it's not that I'm talking about myself. Unfortunately, I have to use myself as an example, because when I talk to people about local radio or local TV, they look at me like, local? What, you know, local? I got cable. Yeah.
And they're probably thinking, like, what am I going to find on local? Like, you think it's like one old TV band show or something?
I think they might be thinking that. But, you know, the younger generations are starting to really find this and use it. And we'll talk about why. But because it is thriving. I use that word carefully because they need dollars. I mean, there's still lots of cutbacks, especially in local radio and public access TV. Yeah. Most stations are really struggling for money. Which means, by the way, if you folks are listening to this and you'd like to sponsor a show, our show or others, you need to get in touch with us, because your money will go a far distance with this, and you'll get used the way we're talking about. I mean, we have a whole sponsorship package that shows where we're getting exposed, and we have to keep updating it. Oh, we have to add Roku. Oh, we have to add Apple. Oh, we have to add iTunes. We have to add iHeart. I mean, it just keeps spinning off. It's like taking on a life of its own. And so that is really valuable. We create good content, and therein lies the key. If we were not creating content that was useful to people, the stations wouldn't play us.
Right.
And they play us every week. And some of these stations are playing us, most of them are playing us two or three times a week. Some are playing 5 to 8 times a week.
Well, so you're getting on-demand streams too, because people can listen whenever they want when you're streaming.
That's right. And so what they do is they download different episodes. I mean, we have so many episodes in the can, as we say in the business, right? So many episodes in the can that they just go and look for something they like. And then every now and then we do a special show. Like, stations actually wrote to us recently and said, do you have any Halloween content, anything for October? And we dug through the archives and came up with the Dead or Alive game show, which was absolutely hysterical. I mean, you're able to laugh at yourself. It was pretty darn funny. And that was done in 2015, I think.
Wow.
When we were doing the Money Doctor show, or maybe 2016, when we rolled out the first book, Debt or Alive. Mm-hmm. And we did this game show, and people showed up, they registered, they competed, they wore crazy
costumes,
they played.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just great, great fun. But they took that and ran with it. So that's playing in October on a lot of these stations. So talk to me a little bit, if you will, about your role as a local radio station when it comes to the education around this area, not so much the government, but local universities and colleges. Do they advertise on your station? What's your tie with those? Because you're in a 5 college area.
Yeah. I mean, we do a lot of work with them. I'm not on the sales side. I'm on the, you know, on air side. So I couldn't give you an educated answer on it. I will say that, you know, it's hard to get people to advertise. They don't look at it as you're looking at it, where, for example, with your show, you're getting the bonus of all these other avenues. For us as well, if you advertise, you're also getting streaming, which is part of it. We also work with people on digital, which is a huge part of radio now. It doesn't have to be exclusive. Digital is separate from radio. They go hand in hand. You know, you hear something on the radio, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to go look it up.
Yes.
So if you've got one person doing, you know, both of those things, like you said, you've got to kind of look where you're going to spend your money. Where are you going to get those bonus, or what we like to call added on value?
Yes.
And you know, that's kind of what I look at. The benefit here, I think, is just it is local. You've got all the local schools here, and we really focus on being local, which if you're a lot of the bigger stations don't. A lot of the bigger stations, it's all, you might have somebody doing the morning show that's from LA or from Nashville, and they're on 100 stations.
Yes.
So it's just kind of homogenized.
Yeah, they're just plugged in, right? Yeah, well, that's what they do. They take the popular shows that are syndicated and download them. And so that's, we've tried to go a different route with financial wellness, because first of all, it would cost us a fortune to get the amount of time that we get on national TV. And to be able to say something other than a soundbite, to be able to tell people, for instance, hey, here's another way you haven't thought of possibly to get free TV and free radio and get more content and local stuff. And by the way, if you are a business, you know, knock, 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 here's opportunity, right? So we would never get that otherwise. But we get it because we've done this sort of grassroots campaign. What worked for us at a local level as 15 years ago is still working for us now. That's why I'm still on radio, haven't left radio for 15 years every week on several stations. Yeah. Haven't left radio. Somebody reminded me of that a few months back. It was another DJ, and he said, you know what? It's good that you do some of your own ads because your voice hasn't left radio in 15 years. And I thought,
it's familiar. Yeah, it's familiarity, and people like that. It's a comfort, you know?
It is. And so when you have something that works, don't fix it, right? If it's not broken, don't fix it. So where we have what worked for us locally here, right in our little area, in this enclave, so then we just pick it up and take it across the country. And it turns out that because of the development in streaming and the development in internet technology and the development in putting our radio show on TV through the power of Zoom, right? Mm-hmm. Or another virtual access. Because of that, then I'm talking directly to people in Wyoming, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas, you know, you name it, we're out there, New York, Connecticut. You know, that would all be frightfully expensive for us to do. I want to point out that there are no advertisements on public access TV. It's not an ad. We're not out there going, buy my product, right?
Right.
The sponsorships are very specific. They say, here's a typical sponsorship. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Jess Tyler. Mm-hmm. Whatever your motto is, here's your phone number, and there is your website address. Now, that is probably a 15-second spot or 15-second sponsor spot. It's enough for people to know where to find you. And if you have a great tagline like ours is Hug Your Money, so unique it's patented, they get that right. And then they go find you. Mm-hmm. And that is a much, in my opinion, a much softer, nicer way to not be bombarded by 10 ads before you can see your movie.
Right.
To watch some local content, get a 15 seconds. Oh, that company sponsored them. You know, in the old days, we used to be sponsored by a liquor company and, you know, places like that. And now we are sponsored by educational facilities more and more and other places. So I think it's just something that, although I did want to talk about it because I think it's a valuable asset that we will lose if we don't find more philanthropists or more people willing to donate to the stations. You can donate your time. You can volunteer. There's an incredible wealth of, at least at the TV station, there's an incredible wealth of experience. There are people who know film production. There are people who teach you how to edit. They will rent or even lease for free, you know, let out for free video equipment and train you on how to use it. They have
talks that's incredible.
With the schools. They do programs with the schools. They film all your local stuff. I mean, it's really amazing. All at a non-commercial, non-advertising level. So if you are willing to provide content that is valuable, then you can do this sort of thing. So just to tie that in, Jess, what I'm saying is this might be a way for you to lower your costs. If you're an individual and you want some free TV or some free radio, you know, go find these stations. If you only stream, if you don't catch it in your local area, you can stream WHMP anywhere in the country, right? It's streamed.
For sure. And I do think that a lot of people, especially if you're an advertiser, you're thinking like, oh, I can't afford that. I can't afford, you know, for example, your show, you're on all these different places across the country. Well, if you brought that up, people would think, oh, there's no way. But this is way more affordable than you think. And you're right. It's different than doing something nationally on a main channel.
What I'm giving you folks right now in this little, you know, a financial fitness show that maybe seems like I'm talking obliquely about finance. What I'm giving you right now is either a way to get better content, broader content, and your local stuff for free if you're an individual, or if you're a business, a way for you to stretch your dollar beyond belief. You can get the national kinds of streaming and exposure on other stations that people watch and access to things like Amazon and Roku and Apple and all of that stuff that you think is going to cost you a fortune.
Yep.
By sneaking in the back door,
mm-hmm.
if I dare say it, with local radio or your local public access TV. But,
yeah.
You know, just the reason I'm doing this show today is because I've talked to a lot of people about this over several years. And mm-hmm. everybody seems like it's really murky. It's really hard to understand. I've never done a show about it. This is the first time I've ever talked about it. And I will tell you, it's not easy, but it's fairly simple. And if you can produce good content, which you could mm-hmm. start either at the radio station or you could start at a TV station and have somebody help you, train you on how to produce content. You know, you could take your brand for your company, or you could just hit your start of their wagon, right? If they're producing content and you're the company, just sponsor somebody who's producing good content.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll give you some crazy examples that just pop into the top of my head. I don't know that these shows exist, but I'm just going to say, here's a show that might work well on a public access station. You're mm-hmm. a ballet teacher and you teach 6-year-olds ballet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all right, you're not going to get national coverage on this, but publicly, local people would love to see their own children and get all their friends to watch. And it might pick up because it's really charming. It's really entertaining. You might be a local pet wrangler. Same kind of thing. If you're personable and you can map out a show and you can string your thoughts together and you can produce something that stations want, then you might go shopping for some sponsor dollars to help out. This is not a money-making proposition. Let me, from the standpoint of a content creator, let me say, I don't get wealthy on my show, right? Mm-hmm. I don't even probably cover my costs all the time because we're always expanding. But sponsors help out with the cost to produce the show because they want to help someone learn something about finance. And it's not their job to do it directly. And in the battle, in the mix, they win by getting their name out, getting their brand out. And it's the same on radio. I mean, the reason I'm not trying to be courteous, you know, tossing the radio thing to you, although it might seem that way to people. The whole point is we started this round, this financial fitness with the Money Doctor, we started this on radio. Now, mm-hmm. the Money Doctor show, you know, 10, 15 years ago was at GCTV in the studio. But yeah. I had grown to a point where I didn't have time to be in the studio every week filming a show. So we came up with this idea, hey, let's just take this radio show that we've got. We'll videotape it. We make it, you know, gives pretty beginnings, endings, sponsors, all of that, and it goes into a TV show. So we're more closely tied than you might think listening to this. But we are, in fact, a local radio station. You're about 30 miles from me. And mm-hmm. a local TV station, which is about, I don't know, a mile and a half from me, right?
Yeah.
Doing this together. And we've both seen this grow from really local, like, how do you find Channel 15, to we're all streaming. We're on Apple. We're on Roku. We're on YouTube. We're on.
Right.
I mean, well, the other day somebody told me we're on Amazon. That was a surprise to me.
I love that.
I'd be on
yeah.
Amazon. And
yeah.
you're right there with me. So that's how this works. And I think if we can continue to do this and we can bring in sponsorship dollars, if people can recognize that this is a valuable asset that we will lose, 48% of the people don't know who their local politicians are.
That's troubling.
We can't have that and continue to have good government. Here's my parting thought. When you think local, think national.
All right. What's your phone number for people to get a hold of you at?
Sure. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
And you've got your website up at hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is sponsored by Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented. Financial coaching and more information at hugyourmoney.com.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.